Hello and welcome to Her Stories from the Woman of the Mediterranean, second part two. This series is being done within the context of the 25th anniversary of 1325, and we want to celebrate the woman of the Mediterranean Women Mediators Network and all the work that they have been doing. Today, this is Magda Zanon recording from a really warm Nicosia, and with me in my virtual studio, all the way from Bethlehem, I have Lucy Talkier. Welcome, Lucy.
Thank you, my friend Magda. It's my honor to be with you tonight.
Lucy is one of the newer members of the Mediterranean Women Mediators Network, and she's also a very cherished friend, so it's a doubly nice opportunity to speak with her. Lucy, you are the deputy mayor of Bethlehem and also
yes.
a founding member of WIAM, which deals in conflict transformation. But you know better. You introduce yourself to the listeners.
Yes. On May 4th, I've been appointed as deputy mayor of Bethlehem municipality.
May 4th, 2025.
Yes. And I've been working at WIAM, the Palestinian Conflict Transformation Center, long time ago, where I started my involvement in peace building and mediation, negotiation. That was my start. Being in organizations, trying to let the youth understand what does it mean conflict. And that was my start.
Tell me, Lucy, you are living in an exceptionally intense situation now, being in Bethlehem. So your work is both very important and a little bit more difficult to do because of the situation. Tell me a little bit about the work that you do and the work that you've done in the past.
Yes, we'll start.
And start off also with a little bit about what is actually happening in the area.
Well, what is happening? This is the most important point. We are living in Palestine. And basically, I live in the West Bank and in one of the governorate called Bethlehem. Bethlehem governorate, we are around 1,010 Palestinian people living in this governorate. This governorate is surrounded by almost 24 settlements. And we are living in a very contentious situation. Especially during the 12 days war and even before the war, we never felt that we are living in a free space to move, because always we had that strangulation of movement. We had that violation of our right as a Palestinian. And with the war in Gaza, it's been increased in the West Bank, but because the media was focusing what is happening in Gaza, and only to be honest, there is no comparison with what's happening in Gaza and what's happening in the West Bank, but it's also it's a brutality, and we are living under the oppression more than before. A very simple example that we are living in a big prison. We are not allowed to move. Bethlehem is around 11 kilos, and we are not allowed to move more than that 11 kilos because the division of our areas with the area A, area B, area C, and what is allowed for the Palestinians to move, where to cross, always there is obstacles and challenges in our life, especially with the checkpoints, with the raids every day, with the unemployment. It's been skyrocketing because Bethlehem is totally dependent on tourism. And since the war started October 7, there is zero tourism in the area. So basically, the economic is deteriorated. Like, especially summertime these days, we have lack of water because Israelis, they are controlling everything. So basically, living in this situation, it's hard to survive. And the cost is really high for us.
I'm sure it is. I was having a conversation last week with a group of Palestinian and Israeli women, and I was explaining to them checkpoints. And our checkpoints, when I look at our checkpoints and I think, why do we have them? I then think of the checkpoints that you have, because with my checkpoint, I just show an ID document and I walk through. I might walk through too, but I just walk through. So I don't think it's really easy for people that don't live your reality to understand what it means to not be able to move, which must make the work you're trying to do, and you've succeeded in a lot of spaces, doubly difficult to manage and to implement.
And I know if that we can compare between the checkpoint in Cyprus or the checkpoint between Cyprus and Turkey or the Palestinians and the Israelis, because our checkpoints is really very restricted, and we need to get a permit from the Israeli authority, and the permit, it's almost less than 5% from the populations that they can get permit to cross the borders, despite all the dehumanizations that they are practicing on us, waiting 5-6 hours on the checkpoints in order to cross.
Tell me, you're doing a lot of work with most of the work that you do is with grassroots women, grassroots population.
Yes, the grassroots, that's true. Grassroots, we are trying to target the most vulnerable and marginalized area, because they are, all of us as a Palestinian, we are in need for the work that we are doing, but there is always a priority for those areas to work with them, because they are more in need than the other areas.
So tell me, with that you do a conflict transformation, and you do a lot of work to advance the substantive participation of women in peace building and decision making. What kind of work have you done?
All right. I think I will start with my story as a mediator in Palestine, working in one of the world's most complex and protracted conflicts. My journey into mediation has been shaped by witnessing the human cost of occupations, violence, and social division, and by a commitment to building peace and justice from the ground up. I work with WEAM, the Palestinian Conflict Transformation Center, where we use dialogue, negotiation, and community-based methods to address the conflict at many levels, between individual, families, communities. And this is the work that we are doing when it comes to negotiations and working with the community, plus working on raising awareness in many topics that we feel that they are in need for. That also, we equip them with, when we talk about negotiation or conflict transformations, so they need to practice it. And how? So we need to equip them with these skills in order they can use it when they are in need for it. How to negotiate with the others. So the center that I work was founded in 1994, and they adapted the traditional sulha mediation. And it is customary Arab conflict resolution practice.
Do you want to explain that?
But what we did, it's we merged the Arab tradition sulha with the Western technique, the skills of negotiation and conflict transformation. And within this integration, we have our own way of resolving the conflict. So we combine the local tradition with the modern approach to mediation and negotiation and peace.
Okay. Well, I do think that a mediation is not a copy-paste kind of tool. It's got to be adapted to each situation each context. Yeah. So you can't do a mediation in Israel-Palestine that you would do in the Democratic Republic of the Congo or in China. Because the cultural context is different, and you've got to work within that context.
That's true.
So tell me more.
So basically, the topics that we deal with, let's say land dispute, family inheritance conflict, it's really high. When it comes to economic, there's a lot of stress. Tensions among political faction and local governance body, gender-based violence and women participation in peace building. So as a mediator, I believe in empowering these communities to manage their own conflict through dialogue and restorative justice. And the role, my role, often include facilitating family mediation sessions to resolve inheritance or marriage disputes, running workshops on conflict transformation, negotiation, nonviolence communications, supporting local council to resolve the municipal conflict without escalation, also working with women and youth to increase their participation in decision making. And that's why my work also connects directly with the UN Resolution 1325 on women, peace, and security that's called for the inclusion of the women in conflict resolution and peace process. Because,
yeah. Okay, carry on.
And why with that adaptations and being with the part of the national team that work on the National Action Plan for 1325, because this is the first resolutions that goes direct to the women issue, women participation.
Women's perspective, gender perspective.
Gender, that's true. And that's why we've been working hard on to implement that resolution on the ground.
Tell me the one thing that caught my attention while you were speaking. You speak about a lot about land resolution of land. How important is land to the Palestinians? Because I think that is at the root of the conflict, and it's an ideology or a cultural thing that is very difficult for other people to understand. I'll give you an example. I was with friends last week, and my friend said to me, but if I was a woman living in Gaza and with my family, the first thing I would do is leave. And I said, firstly, leave to where? And secondly, land is very, very much part of the identity.
That's, you know, if I can jump into that and say, what does it mean land for the Palestinian? And if you look about what's happening on the ground right now and see how is the Israelis, they are leaving because they don't want to live in fear and they don't have nothing to lose because they are not the owner of this land, because they are not the indigenous of this land. So if they are the owner of this land, they wouldn't leave. So they close the chapter and they leave the country for a better place. But despite the Palestinian or the Gazan people living in Gaza like a hell, but still they are connected to that land. The land is the soul, it's the soul for them. It's part of the identity. And we believe as a Palestinians that we are rooted in this land like the olive trees. It's really hard to uproot this olive tree from the land. And this is us as a Palestinian.
I think with the thing that this, I don't want to speak about all the violent loss of life, but the thing that actually caught my, really touched my heartstrings is when the IDF started uprooting olive trees.
Yes.
I think you only understand what it means if you, firstly, if olives are part of your culture, which they're also part of the culture in Cyprus and Greece. The uprooting of the olive trees is uprooting the soul, is trying to uproot the soul of people.
That's true. That's why we are so connected to the land. Lots of Palestinians, they are dying in their land. You know, despite the attack, especially these days or in October when we have the olive harvest, the settler attacks, they are burning the fields. of the olive trees, and they're trying to uproot it, and you still you can find the people so connected, and they are willing to die in their land but not to leave it.
I must admit, Awin, I came to Cyprus 25 years ago, and I inherited from my father's side of the family a house with 20 olive trees. And I had to sell the property because it was an old house and I couldn't afford to restore it, because you've got to restore it in a certain manner. Of everything that I had sold, what I'm missing is the olive trees. That's why I put a tattoo of an olive tree on my arm, to take my home with it with me wherever I go. But tell me more about the how you're facing really unique situations in the West Bank, in Gaza, more so in Gaza. How do you actually do your work, considering that a lot of the time it can be quite hard to meet?
Well, you know, as a Palestinian, we find our ways most of the time, and we learn from the past that we cannot put one plan. We need to put plan A, plan B, plan C, and a contingency plan. Despite the limited freedom of movement due to the occupation, and which complicated our meeting and organizing our dialogues, or what we want to do, or the workshop that we are planning. But still, we are making it. Sometimes we plan it and it doesn't work because of the restriction of the movement. Zoom, it's not working that well. In many places, as we mentioned, that we are targeting the marginalized areas, it's really hard to deal with the internet. But when it comes to more closer to the cities, that we can do the workshops through Zoom, but still we try to be connected with the people physically. So the workshop would be totally different. You can hear them, they can hear you, they can express their emotion in a different way. Many, many women after the workshops, they will come to me or to any of us as a staff, telling us that if we have time, they want to talk to us individually. So many times working with the groups from a group to individual cases, also we give them that space, because people trust us, so they can talk to us easily about what is bothering them. And also, don't forget also the impact of the trauma and the fear of the people. It's sometimes it's really hard for the willingness to engage in dialogue.
I was going to ask you that, because I think that that trauma, when I look at the conflict now in the area, I think to myself, how can anything be rebuilt with the trauma that is being caused? And I'm speaking about the area. I mean, the Israelis, the Palestinians, everyone living in the area. How can anything be rebuilt on something that is so broken? Because everyone in some way has been affected.
Sometimes it's really hard to say that we cannot just move. A trauma, it's a process of healing and intervention. Without a trauma coping, reaching to trauma healing, we cannot move. And still the process, it's really a long way process to move, because the trauma that the kids that they are having in Gaza, it's totally and the trauma that the trauma that we are living in. I can tell you my story about my niece.
Yes,
during
please.
During the COVID, the Israelis, they came to our house in early morning. It was 2:30. And with the hammer, they broke my house. Like me and two brothers, we are living in the same building. And they came first to my house where I lived, me and my sister. They starting to break the door with a hammer. And then we started to say, stop, stop, we are going to open the door. And then my sister went up and opened the door. Within a second, around, I swear, maybe you can think I'm lying, more than 50 soldiers, they were surrounding our house. Up, down, everywhere. Everywhere. And the youngest nephew that we have in our house is 19. And they said, they started to search the house, and they put everything upside down. And my niece, the youngest one, she was that time around 5. You know, until now, if she hear any noise, will start to shiver and cry. Because she felt that time from the day that they entered our house, she couldn't recover from the way how they deal with us or the way how they dealt with her mom. Her mom, she panicked, and when she panicked, she fainted, and she needed medicine. And I was telling the soldiers, please let me go to her room. I want to get her the medicine. The soldiers told me, no, you can't. They said, the lady, she needs her medicine. And then she started shouting at me, tell me where I can get it to her. Anyway, she entered to my brothers and my sister in the room, and she got the medicine, which was wrong one. And my sister-in-law, she has no air to breathe, not anymore. I told her, we need to call the ambulance. The situation is really, she's in need for that. She said, not in that case. So they kept searching our house until 5 in the morning.
What were they looking for, or were they just trying to harass you?
No, they said, there is weapons in your house. We need that weapons. At the end, they want to arrest my two nieces. One was 17 and one was 19. And my other niece, she's 21. She started, like, she felt that I am the one that thinks that I'm the pillars of the house. She was telling me, Lucy, Lucy, and was crying, what we are going to do? And she was crying. I will never forget. So I brought that example. It is maybe comparing to others when they lose their families. There is no comparison. But the trauma, the percentage of the trauma that we are having it as a Palestinian in a different ways, but 99%, if not 100% of the Palestinian, that they are traumatized from what kind of life that we are living. My niece, every time I cross the checkpoint, she will act like she's sleeping. And when we cross the checkpoint, she will open, oh, I was cheating in you. I wasn't sleeping because of the fear.
Yes, it's a coping mechanism. It's the only way she knows how to cope. Yes. Tell me, so how do you do a lot of work on trauma, on healing?
Well, actually, to be honest, I think the start was trauma healing, but I guess we failed to trauma healing because the repetition of the trauma that we are getting as a Palestinian, nowadays we are saying trauma coping. We try to cope with what we are having. We do lots of psychosocial supports, counseling, intervention in many cases, with the peoples that we are getting through. We have a calling center hotline that people can get to call us and get the help, or we go to different places and do psychosocial support, individual counseling, and we do some intervention when the case is in need.
Can I ask you something? Because of the way the conflict is, and a lot of the time men are separated from women. How do the women cope, and what is their role? Has their role changed?
Well, most of the times the role of the women in this country is changing. If you look at it in 90s, at the early 90s, the women, they were leading the national movement in 1990, before Balfour, 92. That was the start of the women movement with the women union. The first intifada, they were using themselves as protecting the fighters, and trying also to give to prepare food for the fighters, or helping when it comes as the nurses, trying to be their shadows in their movement, preparing the food for. But all most of the time, they are trying the men to minimize the role of the women in any action, which is not true. The women, they improve. They had a print in any things that they are doing.
Because
The,
I'm assuming that now, especially in Gaza, with the way that families are being ripped apart and people are dying, that a lot of the time the woman is the head of the family.
Yes, Yani, my mother, one of those that she became a breadwinner with no, not thinking that she will be responsible for six kids after the pass of my dad at early age 51. Soldiers hit him in his with his rifle, and he started to bleed for 40 days, and my dad passed away. So mom found herself
Suddenly
responsible.
being the head of the family at every
Yes.
level,
And
which
that's what's
the
happening in Gaza, and in not in Gaza, in the West Bank. Lots of prisoners, they are in prison, and who will be responsible for the house? The women. So the burden on the woman, it's became double and triple,
yes.
being the breadwinner, raising the children,
Having the
working.
children, firstly, having the children.
Having the children, raising them, her husband will be in prison, or so the responsible for the women, it's became burden
Yes.
thousand times than before.
So tell me, the mediation that you do that combines the Arab cultural tradition with the modern, are you teaching these women how to mediate, or do they do it automatically? Because I know a lot of the time we as women don't think we can mediate. I'm not saying it can't be taught. What I'm saying is that we have certain natural skills in mediation and negotiations.
Yes, I have to tell you something, that mediation is not an easy to be accepted as a woman to be a mediator. This domain is really only for men. So what we are trying to do, so we teach the women, we raise their awareness, we equip them with skills, and we want them to be a mediator within their communities, even where within the women themselves. But still, there is always a start. And we believe mediation in Palestine is more than resolving disputes. It's about building foundation for a just and lasting peace by fostering the understanding, the accountability, and dignity. So we
Yes.
can help to transform the cycle of violence into opportunities for cooperation. And that's what we do.
Okay. I'm going to go back to I'm also a member of the Commonwealth Network, and the thing that I found very, very inspiring is that when I spoke to a lot of the women from West and East Africa, a lot of the mediation of conflict within the communities, within the tribes, was actually done by women. And I would listen to these African women speaking with their wisdom. They would organize and settle things at community level or at family level, and then the decision would be taken to the meant to be paid. It's quite annoying because they were doing incredible work. So I think this is probably the work you're teaching the Palestinian woman to do, because they do. Women are usually the first responders anyway. They're the ones that know what's happening in their families. They're the
And
ones that if
also,
something goes wrong, they've got to deal with it immediately.
and inclusion of the women, because
Absolutely.
we are excluded in many, many ways. If we look about the negotiations that happened in the past, if we are talking about the tracks for negotiation, so basically one or two women being involved in negotiation. So also what we want to see, a strong community based on mediation network. We want to see women to be part of the negotiation. That's why we want to be with the women to be included
And that's why you also need to train them, because even though a lot of the time the training is natural, they do need it to learn a certain techniques which are important if you want to reach a just solution or a workable solution that is makes it both sides happy.
Yeah, that's true. Because we want to see the women taking part in everything. We are excluded from decision making. We are excluded from the negotiation. We are excluded from many, many things in our life. So
I'm going to
how to prove that we are, as a woman, we are strong. We need to be in the field in everything.
But I think the sad part is that men don't understand that women are the first responders. So a lot of the time, if there's an explosion, if there's a conflict, if there someone takes over power, the first person that sees the conflict is the woman. Because if there's a people get killed, who's there?
True.
The woman from the community coming to her, trying to save the people that are wounded, putting them out of danger, trying to give food to the people that have been displaced and giving them shelter. Tell me, I'm going to ask you a controversial question. At this stage in the conflict, with the intensity it's happening at now, is there any chance of mediation between Palestinian women and Israeli women?
It's impossible. It is impossible for many reasons. One of the reasons that we are in a period of we are divided, the divisions between the Israelis and the Palestinians within this war, it's really hard to get back again on the table. And the plus, what we are seeing increasing the extremism, not the leftist, mostly the rightist, and that's what
Absolutely.
we are seeing with this fanatic government, that they are supporting the settlers, equip them with weapons,
Protect
which
them when they, when they. I saw a lot of them moving into homes or assaulting Palestinians in the West Bank, and the IDF just watches.
that's true. It's really hard. Also with the division of the strangulation of movement, with the apartheid wall that they are building, that divided us from, let's say, what they call it, neighbors. But the physical movement, it's really, which is really impossible these days. And also sitting on the table to talk about what? Mediation on what?
So at this
Where?
stage, are you doing mediation between communities, between families? Is that
Yes,
the
only.
focus these? Okay.
Yes, within the Palestinian community.
Oh, I can understand that, because I agree. At this stage, you're gonna with so much violence and so much death and so much extremism in both sides. I don't
True.
know if I'd want to talk to an Israeli if I was Palestinian.
It's to talk about what these days? About peace or about killing thousands of people or the destruction in Gaza or about the situations of the prisoners, the sick prisoners or the treatment that they are, the prisoners they are facing in the prison. About what?
I had a discussion with some Israeli woman who was saying to me, "You don't. How would you feel if you were a mother of one of the hostages? And I said, well, probably the same way I would feel if I was a Palestinian mother whose son had been arrested and she doesn't know where he is. And
Yes.
I think she got a shock. She said, well, it didn't occur to her. I said, exactly
yeah,
the same.
How many hostages right now? 10,
well,
14, 15, 100, 200? How many hostages from the Palestinian sides? More than 11,000 people that they are in prison.
But especially if you look at, I'm not saying adults should be in prison. What I'm thinking is, how many young boys under the age of 13 have been in prison? Palestinian
yes.
boys.
There is no comparison with the hostages. And even the hostages that they are saying that they are hostages with Hamas. The Hamas shows on the news when they released the what they call them hostages, the treatment of the people that they were with Hamas, they get treated well. But on the other side, what about the treatments of the Palestinians that they are in prison?
No, I agree. I mean, that's no, and I think one of the reasons the Iran war happened is because there was a sway in public opinion against the Israelis, and I think they didn't like it. I think there was so much evidence of the genocide, the injustice, the imbalance, the brutality. And suddenly they had to do something to take the attention away from there. These pictures we're seeing about humanitarian...
This is another catastrophe. They are giving them food on the right hand and they are killing them from the left hand. And the way how they are giving the humanitarian, let's say humanitarian food for the Gazan peoples, they harm them before giving them.
At this stage, it's worth nothing, almost,
yes.
the food. Tell me, because we're coming to the end of this conversation, if you could give one message to the woman of Palestine, what, or one piece of expertise or tool, what is the thing you would give them?
I think the women, they are strong. They can make a change, and the change will start with them and from them, because they are the one that they raise the new generation.
Is there any woman in the world that you find is a role model that you wish you could bring her into the conversation to make it easier to stop the conflict, except for my big hero is Francesca Albanese, the special representative. Is there anyone?
The Spanish lady she's advocate for the Palestinian cause or for human rights. Yes, I think, what's her name?
Oh, that's Francesca Albanese is Italian. But there is a Spanish woman, because it's also the Spanish government has come out in support, strong support.
Yes,
I
can bring many models, but I will bring three models, and local they are. One of them, Hanan Ashrawi, she's really strong. And also Amal Khreshi. Amal Khreshi, she's my teacher in humanity. And also, I love the story or the hero called Madeline. And they call the Madeline boat for justice on behalf of her name.
Tell us the story, because I think not everyone knows that story. Most people think it's just a name, but tell us the story of Madeline.
Yes, Madeline, she's a lady from Gaza. Her dad found out that he has cancer, and he was a fisherman. He couldn't continue go to the sea to fish, and she's the one that took the responsibility for her family. And she became a well-known fisherman in Gaza, Madeline. Yes.
When was Madeline alive? When was she born? What period are we talking about? Is she still alive, Madeline?
Yes, she's still alive.
Oh, good.
Until now. I don't know during the war what will happen, but she, as far as I know, until now she's alive. and she's in her early 40s. And she's a very, very strong woman. And you can say that she's a leader. Even she became a hero in many ways as a woman that took the leads, as a strong woman, a breadwinner, entering a domain that only men used to work on it.
I think when I did read the story of Madeline, I was thought to myself, so inspiring that they chose to name the ship after her, because she really is a role model. She just stepped into the shoes of
her
she
dad.
Just had to do, yes, her dad. Tell me, is Hannah Ashrawi still active?
She's active on many ways, but not like before as a negotiator. Now she's... she's at Birzeit University, and also she's the director of Muftah. Muftah, a Palestinian organization that deal with human rights and democracy. She's still active in speaking engagement. Yes, she is.
Okay. I think we could carry on for a long time having this conversation, but I think this is a good place to end it. Is there anything you want to say before we close?
Thank you, Magda, for choosing me to be interviewed for the networks. And I think it's my honor to be part of this network, the Network for Mediators. Definitely, it's a safe space. It's also an open space on the from international level to take part, to learn and share the experience on different level. I was really eager, and I work hard to be part of this network, because I know that I will learn a lot from this network.
Well, I think the most important part, I've been a part of this network since the beginning. I think the most important part of this network is that you know you're never alone, that you've always got someone that will listen, someone that you can talk to, information, to give you information, to reach out your hand. So I'm glad we've got you on board, because the more women we have and the more women we have in conflict zones, the more we learn and the more we can help each other. So I'm very happy to have you in this network as well, Lucimo.
Thank you, dear.
Okay, and I'm going to say, and in your case, it's very important, I'm going to say, please stay safe.
And we do our best.
We all need to stay safe. We all need to protect ourselves. And we all need to carry on promoting 3025, because women actually do make a difference. The gender perspective does make a difference.
That's true.
Okay. Thank you, Lucy. Thank you for being with us. To the listeners, thank you for listening. And stay tuned for the next series, next podcast. The next, not the next podcast, but the next mediator. Thank you.
Bye-bye.